Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto podcast series.
Welcome to the Relationship Manifesto, episode 41. My name is Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb. Santa Stephen Whitehead.
Santa Claus.
Santa Claus.
Father Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah, all of those.
And
reluctantly at times.
Yeah. Dear Santa, what are you giving me for Christmas? Mm-hmm. And we thought we'd...
So this is our Christmas podcast, isn't it?
It is.
So we're gonna divide this into two bits.
We are.
Yeah, we are. Chris.
Okay.
We're gonna start off with the fun bit, and then we're gonna go into the more serious bit, back to relationships, because this is the Relationship Manifesto podcast. So, but there's this fun bit, Christmas, Chris. You're in the jolly spirit of it, are you?
It's not fun for Santa.
Why?
He only comes once a year.
I knew I was going to say that sometime, didn't you? Let's get that one out the way. Yeah. Christmas, wonderful time. So what's...
I don't know, you see, because...
Oh, well, let's not get into the downside of it. Let's stay with all the fun and the jollity and the kissing under the mistletoe. I don't know, there's no mistletoe in Thailand.
Well, this is the thing. We don't live in a Christian country.
No, absolutely not. But it's all over the place, isn't it? You go into the shopping malls here and you see... I think one of the biggest Christmas trees I've ever seen is in Chiang Mai Central Plaza. It takes up about 3 or 4 floors. It's massive.
Really?
Yeah. And there's all these Thais who are getting the taken. They've noticed they're having the photos taken in front of it in the shopping centre. But, you know, it's wonderful. It's a great time, I'd say, with some irony. But Father Christmas. I mean, it was great when I was a kid. I loved it. Because I believed in Father Christmas up until about 11 years old.
You mean he doesn't exist? Hang on.
Chris. I disillusioned you. Yeah, but I did. I was, you know, it was a magical time.
Up until the age of?
11, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Those are days of innocence. I don't think anybody, kids today lose it when they're about 7. But, yeah, no, I did. I up to about 11. But, certainly 10, and it was magical time. And we had, my father and mother, they had a florist shop and fruit and veg and all the rest of it. And we had all the Christmas stuff, all the Christmas vegetables and fruits, and it was a busy time.
Tangerines
and mandarins.
And nuts, box of dates.
Box of dates, yeah. And they had these little plastic swords in that you could pick out the dates.
Oh, this is reminiscent time.
Yeah,
it is. Sorry about this.
I mustn't go down this path too much.
Yeah, but dates are to do with relationships. So
dates to do with relationships. There's a link there, yeah. But coming down the chimney. Have you ever come down the chimney, Chris?
I can't answer that. I can't answer that. The answer is it's probably quite difficult to find a chimney nowadays. But
not any in Thailand.
Look, I wasn't born in the Victorian age, and they used to send me up a chimney as a child, because they used to do that, didn't they? They'd send little kids up chimneys to clean them.
That was the miserable Victorians.
Yeah,
they ever got a lot to answer for, the Victorians.
Rid of all the soot.
But what do we do at Christmas? Well, I know you're not a Christian. I don't know. You know, I'm not. I'm Buddhist. You're neither here. You're not sure what you are.
I've got Christian values. Are you? I think.
Okay. Have you ever been to church at Christmas?
I have. Because actually, I quite like Christmas carols.
Okay. Great.
And
all right, Chris.
Going to church with Christmas carols is quite nice.
Here we go. Chris sings a carol. Come on, Chris. You sing one. I will sing one.
No way. I'm not going. I'm not going to subject listeners to that. I can't remember any words.
No, you just said you went to church.
Yeah, but I can't remember them. You know, I used to have a book.
Okay, I will sing one. I will sing. Here's one from all my friends and listeners out there.
Sorry, boys and girls. I can't stop him.
It's only going to be short. So don't worry. I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I can't think of any more than that.
Good tidings we bring to you and your king.
See, I told
you. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
And you are getting singing.
Yeah, but I'm tone weird. So, but that's not, yeah, but that's the sort of commercial. I quite like the songs in church.
Silent Night.
Yeah. Midnight services.
Yeah, I've been to some. Yeah, midnight services in Northern England. They were quite nice. And they're atmospheric, aren't they? But and it's all part of this scenario that builds up around Christmas. The nicer bit, you know, and the fun and the... Did you ever get oranges in a stocking? At the end of the bed.
They were tangerines normally.
Tangerines in a stocking. So the old days, you know, you put your stocking on the end of the bedpost.
They don't do that anymore.
I don't think so. I don't think unless you put laptops and computers and Xboxes in a stocking.
Right.
But you had the stocking and your parents would come along and they'd still go through this tradition of putting the tangerines in a few nuts and whatever and small toys. But then there'd be...
And some party fillers from Woolworths.
Party fillers from Woolworths. And then there'd be the big toy. I mean, big toys I remember. I remember getting a fort, you know, with all the soldiers and stuff.
You were 36 at the time, right?
Yeah, a bit older. I was still playing with soldiers when I was, Or Jack in the Box or something. I don't know. Even a bike once.
And you have to be careful in a podcast called Relationship Manifesto and saying I like playing with soldiers. It could be taken the wrong way.
Yeah, well, why not? Yeah, so all this wonderful time at Christmas. So what's your fondest memory then?
Of Christmas? I suppose it's when it's very cold, first of all, in the UK compared to what I've experienced for the last quarter of a century. I suppose the if it's snowed, that's a nice relationship, but climate makes a big difference on how I see Christmas. And I suppose it would be, as a youngster, it would be, you know, waking up and feeling a weight at the foot of the bed because there's a present pressing on your feet, you know. I suppose that would be it. Eating the big traditional Christmas lunch, eating too much, sitting down after lunch and watching some Morecambe and Wise on the telly or something like that.
Yeah, Morecambe and Wise, brilliant. Incidentally, I just realised, I want to say hello to one of my dear friends, a young lady called Maren, ex-student of mine. Hi, Maren. Maren's she's living in Boston at the moment as an intern, still at university. But why Maren's...
Boston in the States.
Boston in the States, yeah. But Maren's family, they've owned the turkey farm for generations, at least two generations. And it's a big time for them. So they've got all these turkeys because you've got Thanksgiving in America. And that's, I think, when's Thanksgiving? It's about this time of the year, isn't it?
It's about 3 weeks ago.
I got some Thanksgiving thanks.
Yeah.
But we, of course, the Brits, they have the turkey on Christmas Day. And it's this traditional scenario where mum cooks the turkey, father cuts it, serves it. And he's got these two kids sat around who then get served it. And that's the traditional nuclear family that operates in the image of the sort of the ideal Christmas family setting. But of course it's, you know, for many...
The Disney version.
It's the Disney version, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Some of the best Christmases I had, I think, were when I was running pubs and restaurants in the north of England, because Christmas in a pub and restaurant can be good fun.
Yes.
And it's busy, of course, but there's a certain atmosphere to it. This idea of the nuclear family and everybody sitting around the table, Christmas dinner, it's intensive. And this comes us on to the other aspect of it, which is we have got these memories of it, but we filter the bad memories out. Can you think of a bad Christmas?
I can think of one instance in a Christmas which was bad. But generally, no. And I agree with you. As human beings, we seem to filter out the bad experiences, don't we?
Yeah.
And we talk about the good old days.
Yeah. But what's Christmas for? This is one of the questions that comes to mind. I mean, people don't realise, I think a lot of people don't realise, Christmas is actually the 25th and 26th of December. It's actually that period goes, its origins of celebration go back to the midwinter feast in Northern Europe that was celebrated thousands of years before Christ was born. And then for some, whether coincidence or what, the birthday of Jesus Christ, apparently around the midwinter, you've got the feasting and the celebrations, but they've been around in historically for many, many millennia. So now it becomes...
Well, not many millennia, because he died 2,000 years ago, so it's only been two millennia.
But listen to what I'm saying. The point is that the midwinter feast was around long before Jesus Christ.
Oh, okay.
So you might be going back 10,000 years in Northern Europe for when the feasting was done. Certainly, we're going back.
I didn't know that. I never thought about that. So they used to have sort of pagan festival in the end of December every year.
Your pagan festival is Christmas, yeah?
I never thought of that.
Well, it wasn't, of course, it wasn't called Christmas then or whatever name they gave it, but it would have been the time of the midwinter. And because the time of the midwinter would have been in the Northern Hemisphere, it was a particularly harsh time, weather wise, cold, little food. They stored up a lot of the food. They made the mead or the alcoholic drinks and they celebrated.
Yeah.
It was a way of getting through the winter. Onto the coming spring, but it then gets taken over eventually by the birthday, a celebration of the birth of Christ, and then it goes to another stage, which is where we are now, which is the celebration of materialism, the celebration of conspicuous consumption,
the celebration of the mighty dollar,
and it's moved from it's kept its essence, I guess, which is about feasting and about excessive consumption, because in thousands of years ago it would have been about excessive eating or drinking, but it's now about excessive spending, and it's a very stressful time. I think people find it increasingly stressful, and in terms of relationships, this is one of the reasons why relationships tend to break up. One of the high points of risk breakup for a relationship is Christmas, December.
I'm really surprised you say that, because I would have thought, because of the sort of bonhomie and everything, that Christmas would be the one time you might come closer together with a partner.
That's the illusion, and that's part of the stereotypical vision of Christmas, and that's why Christmas is so dangerous, because we associate association, friendship, family with it, but friends and family are not always nice to be around. Family, friends maybe, we can choose. Family, we can't. And I think for many people who are not, for 360 days of the year, not that close to the family, for 4 or 5 days, or even if it's only 24 hours, they've got to be in that intense family situation. And that can create, it can expose flaws in the relationship. Tricky aspects of the relationship which have remained hidden all year, but in the intensified time of coming together, you ally the drink and the food and the tiredness and the general stress of it all, then it's a time of when relationships get really tested. Christmas is not a good time for relationships. And we've also caught up with this idea of the ideal family, you know, the mum and dad, nuclear family, 2 kids. But what about LGBT people who are, where do they fit in? What about the single people? What about people who are divorced? Because, you know, you've got, as we said in last week's podcast, you've got this concept of what I call it NIMF. You've heard of NIMBY?
No.
Well, NIMBY in the UK.
It's a Toyota car, right?
No. NIMBY in the UK is not in my backyard.
Oh, no, I haven't.
Have you not come across that? You lived out in the East too long, Chris. NIMBY, N-I-M-B-Y, means not in my backyard. And in the British context, what we say is, I believe in nuclear power, but I don't want a nuclear power station in my backyard.
I understand.
Or I believe in wind farms, but I don't want one overlooking my house. It's okay, but just don't bring it close to me. Now, there's another concept here, and it links back to LGBT people. And the concept that I've come across, well, one I've made, is NIMF, N-A-M-F. And what that means is not in my family. So it's where you get the parents saying, well, I'm not against gays. I'm not against transsexual people or transgendered people or people who don't have my sexuality, but also want one in my family.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you've got the situation at Christmas where people who are LGBT, who for most of the year are living quite happily in their own domain, their own social group, comfortably, Christmas time, they've got to be with the family. They've got to be with the parents. They've got to be with people they may be not going to associate with that's the time of the year, and that's when these tensions can arise. This issue of acceptance and social connection get exposed.
I find that's really sad that
that
a time of the year where you're supposed to be comfortable.
Yeah.
If you're spending time with your family and it takes you out your comfort zone.
Sure.
How sad is that?
It is sad. But what about, I mean, given those examples, what about the many women who are girlfriends of married men? You've got women who are living on their own. They are in love maybe with a married guy. For sure, they're not going to see him over Christmas. He's going to be with his family. Mm-hmm. Conversely, what about the boyfriends of married women? The men who are involved with a married woman, and she's going to be with her family. That guy's going to be on his own, or with his friends, or he's with his own family maybe. But whatever, there's going to be this sense of being apart. So you might well find there'll be, and this will certainly be the case in tens, hundreds of thousands, maybe million, well, millions of homes at Christmas around the world, this Christmas, where you've got the family together, but what's going on in a lot of the minds of the people in that family, they'll be thinking of others who are not there, who can't be there because they're not accepted, because the secret, the hidden, they've got to be rendered invisible. So then you get the sort of the secret texting in the toilet after Christmas dinner. <No. Yes. laughs> The phone call. I've got to go out.
About that. I bet it does happen though.
Yeah, of course it will. Yeah, I've got to go and get. I want to check the dog's okay. So I go outside and I've got to take the dog for a walk. And while you're out taking the dog for a walk, you make the phone call to the girlfriend or the boyfriend. How are you doing? How are you coping? How's it going for you? Isn't it awful? I'm looking forward to seeing you in the new year.
Yeah.
So this is the reality for many people, and I know it sounds harsh and unpleasant, but there's research that's recently been undertaken by some academics, and they've used Facebook data. Facebook is becoming an increasingly important forum for doing research, because if you can get access to what people are saying and what you can trigger, for example, when people are breaking up. And what this research has done, it's identified the two major peaks in the year when people break up, and it's holiday time. One is March around Easter, the other one is December at Christmas. That's when you're most likely to break up. And I reckon that the Christmas and the March are linked, because I think for many people, Christmas sort of exposes the fractures in the relationship. You've then got a few months to sort of see it into the new year, try and make it work. March, that's the cutoff. You then leave. If you've not left at Christmas, if there's going to be a bomb, it's going to be 2 or 3 months later. Now, not for everybody, obviously, but this good quality academic research has identified this. And anybody who's interested in it, I can send them the links through my email. In fact, they've got a name for it now. A lot of sociologists have come up with a term. Because it's becoming so common for people to break up over the Christmas, they call it the turkey drop.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I've had friends of mine that have broken up over Christmas. I remember one guy, this is some years back, he just walked out on Boxing Day. It's happened to me.
From his wife?
From his wife, and he was seeing someone else.
No kids?
There was a child, yeah.
Wow, that's, that could be seen as very cruel.
Of course, yeah, it could be seen as very cruel. He just, I don't know, he obviously couldn't take it anymore, and the whole facade of it, trying to maintain appearances, became too much, and he just went. He just got in his car and drove off on Boxing Day and never came back.
Wow.
And that, a few months later, the divorce was going through. Of course, it cut his wife up tremendously and the whole family, but it's happened to me. I had a separation over Christmas, over a decade ago. And it was a Christmas when I was... well, for me, it was a very poignant time, and I just withdrew completely from the whole family. I was with a new partner, and I felt very guilty. It was a difficult time. I wanted to do this. I wanted to make this break, But the only way I could cope with it was just to completely withdraw. And I remember that particular Christmas living in a, with my new partner in a small cottage in central Lancashire, not far from the Pennines.
Sounds like garret might be the word. No, it wasn't. It was a cottage, right?
It was a cottage. Yeah. It was a nice, very comfortable cottage. It was my partner's house. You know, log fires and all the food and drink, but just the two of us.
Yes.
And I completely cut myself off. I did the Christmas greetings, but there were no big family dinner. I didn't take part in any of that. It was just a time for me transition, and it was the essence of it was breaking up from my second partner, second wife. And it all happened over Christmas. And the thing followed on into the new year, obviously, and after the new year, it became easier, but Christmas was this poignant time when you feel guilty, you feel you've got to be with other people, but I just didn't want to be.
Do you think the family talked about you over Christmas dinner when you weren't there? What did they say? Is it, anybody know where Stephen is? What
well,
did they say?
By then the family was spread out, so there were different family Christmas dinners. It was a question of which one do I want to be at. Actually, I think. Yeah, I mean, the family, I could have gone to any of the Christmas dinners that were available in the family. And I made my apologies, said, look, this is the reason why. It's just a difficult time for me. I want to just have a quiet time. Mm. I want isolation. And being in this cottage with, you know, it's like in the UK at that time of the year, Christmas, December, the days are short. Mm. You hardly ever get any sun. It's only gone. You get a glimpse of sun maybe for 3 or 4 hours during the midday. You've got log fire. It's warm. You've got, as long as you've got the food and the drink and it, watching a bit of television, it was just a way of winding down. Mm. And it was, the isolation was good. For me, that particular Christmas, the isolation was good. But bear in mind that previous years I'd been in the pub and restaurant business where I had anything but isolation, where you're constantly providing entertainment and a venue for people to enjoy their own Christmas food and drink, because that's what you are. You're a host.
Mind you, it also means if you're doing that, I guess you're really opting out, aren't you?
Which?
If you are a publican, then you're actually opting out from your own personal life, and it's purely running, it's focused on that. So any of the...
Sure.
You know, why isn't Stephen here? Oh, he's at work.
Well, you know, we had... In those days, it was my first wife, Rosemary, and she is a very gregarious person. And she loved Christmas. For her, it was a great thing. But we used to open the pub on Christmas Day. So for us, Christmas Day was, although I had Gavin, a young child, and he'd be 8, 9, 10. For us, Christmas Day was absolutely heaving busy, because we were in a public house selling. We didn't open the restaurant, but that on Christmas Day.
You didn't?
No, it was too much. We didn't want to get all the staff in for that. But the bar was open, and the licensing laws those days were quite strict. You could only open for 2 hours. So I think you opened from 11 till 1.
Yes.
And for 2 hours, people just piled in. All the regulars, the people who normally came to the pub, plus new people, they all came, and you couldn't get in the place. So for 2 hours, you got all your staff on. It was just bedlam. And then you've got to get everybody out. You've got to get cleaned down. Everybody goes home. Everybody has their own dinner. And that's what we did. Rosemary then cooked the dinner for me.
And the staff.
Gavin. Oh. No, not the staff. But a small circle of friends that we had, or family if they were with us.
Yes.
That was in North Leeds, in north of England. But it was, that was enjoyable, but it's not something you want to do. I'm glad I'm not doing it now. I'm glad I'm out in Thailand and really somewhat removed from the whole Christmas phenomenon, which I think has got overly intense. I think we're exploited, and I use that. I think we are exploited by commercialism.
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, because we are exploited by
the commercialism. From my perspective, the commercialism's one of the commercialism's aims are to make you feel guilty.
Yeah,
if you're not spending money and in the Disney model.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the other reason why. I mean, I'm going to stay with that thing, because I think that commercialism, that intensification of the commercial aspects of it, creates an intensification of stress, because you're in stress, you're in a stressful situation, particularly people nowadays where there's a lot of financial issues, financial uncertainty, the economic situation for everybody. you come to Christmas, you've got to spend, you've got to make sure you buy presents for your kids, you know, you have the food, you have the drink, you do the parties, Christmas cards. The whole thing is about spending money.
No, nobody does Christmas cards anymore, Steve.
Do they not? Oh, no, well, send it on the e-card. I've sent five. Anyway, but you've got this intensification of financial stress. You've got probably got both parties, both parents working, both if a family, mum and dad are both going to be working full time, and if they're not working full time, they're probably going to be doing overtime at Christmas. There's this guilt about not being happy or not feeling comfortable and not doing enough, particularly for your loved ones, your children, and it's a difficult time. I don't think I don't think we can control it anymore. My way of controlling it was to drop out of it, and I dropped out of it big time on one occasion. I never really went back much after that, and now, of course, living out in Thailand, I can ignore it altogether if I wish to,
just
another work day.
It takes a little while to get used to that. I've been in this environment for years now where it's been just another work day and everybody goes to work as normal.
Yeah, and I like that.
You want to go to a supermarket or a DIY warehouse, it's all open, just another day.
I mean, there's the term compulsory cheerfulness. And I think that sums it up.
Really. Did you just make that up?
No, I've come across that term in the research I've done on it. Compulsory cheerfulness.
Right.
You've got to be happy.
You're going to have a good time whether you like it or not.
You're going to have a good time whether you like it or not. How awful is that? I mean, this is the lack of choice that we've got. And life is difficult enough as it is nowadays. But I don't think Christmas is a time for relaxation for many people. It's just the opposite. It's a time for being unsure, being lonely if you're single, if you want to be with someone or you've lost a love. Maybe you've become a widow or widower that year, and it's a time for
regret. That must be a terrible feeling to have lost a partner and actually be on your own.
You know,
on Christmas Day.
Many people who've lost loved ones during that year. You know, I mean, I don't know why this has come to mind. What about the people who are fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, the soldiers out there, men and women, injured, killed? You know, what about the families coping with that at Christmas? Mm. You know, and it's a time to remember that it's for everybody, not for a lot of people. It's not a happy time. It's a sad time. And it's a sad time because they're reflecting on love that's gone. Either whether that love's gone because someone's passed away, or it's a breakup, or a divorce, or you know, so whatever.
Yes.
You know, in fact, I think for many many families, it's a crucifying time. What if it's the worst case situation? As a parent, you've lost a child.
Yes.
And it comes to Christmas, and then Christmas then takes on a whole new meaning of unhappiness. And even dread, you'd be dreading the moment. You'd be dreading Christmas coming up because, you know, your child that was there in your life's now no longer there. So, no, I think we overdo it.
Stephen, so what are the coping strategies if you're in that situation?
I think the coping strategy is to not force yourself to be happy and not force yourself and not feel guilty if you're not. I think you accept your emotions. You accept your feelings. Your feelings are genuine. They're important. If you're crying, if you're upset, if you're lonely, that's okay. You know, these are genuine human emotions. But I think the good news is that, you know, Christmas doesn't last long, and we're into the new year. And I think the new year can be a healing time, because the new year can be this time when we are reflecting on the future to come, and we can be optimistic. We've had a bad year. Maybe different situations have happened in our life emotionally, career-wise, financially, health-wise. But, you know, it is a new year, and life is precious. Mm. We're here, we're alive, and we're beginning in the new year. So embrace that. And, you know, we know that life is going to be painful. No one's going to avoid it. No one ever has, no one ever will. It's a fundamental aspect of being. But if you can find the calmness in yourself, you can find a quiet time where you're not forced in this compulsory cheerfulness, you know, mode. but you where you can reflect on the future and think and look at your strengths, look at what look at think, well, okay, that was a difficult year, but I came through it, and I've learned from that. So the next year I'm going to build on that learning process. I'm going to move forward, and I'm going to grow. I'm going to use the lessons that I've learned. And I know I'm not going to avoid pain. I know maybe there's going to be some difficult times ahead. But I like my own feeling. I'm a naturally optimistic person. I like to look back on the year and think about the good things that went on. I don't dwell too much on the bad, the difficult times. And when I do, I try to think of them as being productive in terms of me learning and moving on and developing as a person. So I think the new year can be a time when we can be optimistic for the future. Yes. And it might be that the future is going to be difficult, but it's life. We're moving into a new cycle, and that's marked by this by the first of January. And I think it's fortunate it comes so close to Christmas, when I think Christmas can be a punishing time for many of us emotionally. We'll least expect it.
No, don't worry, the January sales will heal everything.
Oh, the January. Then you've got the January sales.
They're after our money all the time, aren't they? It's commercialism. It's, you know, sure, people's credit cards are going to be maxed out at the end of December anyway, and what happens? The January sales come along.
I mean,
this still happens, right, in the West a lot.
Well, they still do the January, but well, now it's like here, isn't it? Where here being Asia, where you've got sales on pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
Any excuse for a sale. But the January sales are a tradition in the UK. But coming back to some stats that came out, that these have just come out from the Office of National Statistics in the UK, and they've only come out this week, and they've been presented into the public media in relationship to Christmas breakups. So here's some latest stats coming out. There's not many of them, but here they are. One third, this is in the UK, right? One third of all marriages fail within 15 years now. One third. All marriages fail within 15 years.
Wait, all marriages?
Yeah, all marriages that were in, that occurred in the last 15 years, one third of them are failing.
Okay.
Now, marriages have been around longer than that, then they've likely got a longer time span. But any marriage in the last 15 years, a third of them are failing. The most at risk, and this is something we're going to talk about at the next podcast, the age group most at risk of divorce is the 40s to 50s, particularly the 40 to 45 age group. In 2009 in the UK, 114,000 marriages ended in divorce, which was slightly up on 2008. In 2010, 120,000 marriages ended in divorce. So a constant increase.
Yes.
Now, we've already said that Christmas is the time for when these breakups occur. That's not necessarily a time when divorces occur, but it's a time when the fractures, the problems in a relationship get exposed, and people then are struggling how to deal with it. Some people, as I said earlier, the friend of mine walked away on Christmas, on Boxing Day. Others will stick it out, put a brave face on, and then come the new year, they think, oh, that's it. They do their own reflections on the year to come and think, well, I think I need to be somewhere else.
Yes.
I need to bite the bullet. I miss my loved one so much when I was with the family. I have to go and be with my loved one. And my loved one is not my wife or my husband or whatever. There's financial stress. There's changes in lifestyles. And there's employment changes.
You're talking about the 40, 45-year-old now? Or
generally? Yeah. No, I'm talking about one of the reasons why we're getting more divorces. But these are certainly, those points are applicable for the 40, 45-year-old. But the other thing I'm conscious about is what I call, you know, the Facebook Christmas. Because what is the Facebook Christmas? I was watching this documentary shown on television in the UK on Mark Zuckerberg. And there was part of, it was a fascinating documentary, but there was an aspect of it when the reporters were interviewing young people. By young, I mean, I'm saying 18 to 30 or 18 to 25, that age group, and asking them how long to spend on Facebook in one day. 1 hour was the minimum. Some of these young people who were being shown in this documentary were admitting to spending 2 to 3 hours a day on Facebook. Now, I wanted to put that move forward then, looking at what Christmas is in terms of what are these young people doing on Christmas Day? Because I don't, for sure, they're not, a lot of people, young people, are not sitting around the fire with traditional Christmas dinner. You know, they're going to be on the computer, they're going to be social networking, Facebook's going to be massively oversubscribed, Twitter and all the other social networking sites we've got around the world. The family setting, the traditional family that we've got, where everybody talks to each other, shares a drink and good humour and cheerfulness over lunchtime and through into the afternoon, and then watches television, usually the Morecambe and Wise show repeat at about 7 o'clock. One of the films that was the traditional Christmas that you and I were raised in and experienced, that's gone now. I think many people, it'll be a quick lunch, straight to the computer, and the family will split up. You'll have mum and dad, the two kids, if it is a nuclear family, they'll all be on their own computers, all Facebooking. There'll be very little interaction. So you'll have all these hundreds of thousands and millions of people around the world connecting with their hundreds of thousands and millions of friends, most of whom they've never met. The family itself, the sisters and brothers, the core family network, which is supposed to be your main support network through life, right, ideally, nobody's going to be talking to each other. They're all going to be on Facebook or Twitter. And I don't think that's an exaggeration. I think that'll be what is happening in many families today. We're seeing the breakdown of traditional married life and traditional family life, and I think it gets exposed at Christmas time.
And that's one thing there to that, Stephen. I think you're thinking of being on Facebook, like sitting at a desk here on it, but with mobile devices like smartphones and iPads, you can actually have both of those environments happening at the same time.
Well, you could
have little Jimmy with his mobile phone.
Sure, and he'll be sat at the table and he's got his mobile phone on and
So actually both could coincide. There's a wonderful sign up in a classroom I've seen, which is I know you're using you're on Facebook while you're in class. The teacher had the sign said something like because staring down at your crutch with the big smile on your face doesn't mean you're doing something else necessarily.
Yeah.
Right?
But I still make the point that I don't think it's not about, it's a form of social interaction which we've got to get used to. And I know it's good for Facebook. You know, the company's got, when it floats on the stock exchange in a year's time, it's going to be worth a lot more than even Tesco. But it's a different form of social interaction. This is not people communicating with each other verbally, eye to eye. It's over the computer and often with faceless people you've never met. Predominantly with faceless people you've never met, that you may have some emotional connection with, or you think you've got some emotional connection with. If I was trying to create a traditional family setting for Christmas lunch, for example, Christmas dinner, the sort of Christmas dinners that you and I experience, where the whole thing sort of peaks at Christmas dinner, all the build up, the months of leading up to Christmas, you've got this 24-hour pinnacle.
Yes.
Christmas Day. Everybody's got to be for Christmas dinner. I'd ban any computer.
Switch off your devices.
Yeah, but I think many young kids can't do it. I think they'll go through some sort of
cold turkey
withdrawal.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, cold turkey. Yeah, quite. It's all packed up into such a short time, and I think we forget, of course, the religious element to it. I mean, what is the religious element to it? I mean, it's sharing, loving, companionship, harmony, peace on earth, goodwill to all men and women. I'm absolutely support all that. But it's, again, that's the image, isn't it? That's the, we're attempting that, I think. I think in our heart of hearts, that's what we want. I don't think anybody goes into Christmas thinking, I want to do harm to people. There might be some radical nuts out there who do want to do that. But for most of us, yeah, we want harmony. We want peace and we want joy. The reality is, of course, that it's if it's enforced on us, it's not natural. It's compulsive. It's compulsory. You will be happy on Christmas Day.
Compulsory cheerfulness.
Compulsory cheerfulness.
One of my new terms now.
Yeah. Very powerful, though. I think it just captures it. And the other thing that's changed, you know, over the decades is, you, where I said earlier, you've got both mum and dad working. So you've got a...
You hardly ever mention the grandparents.
Yeah, well, I think the grandparents get a harder time nowadays, because often the grandparents can be out the loop. You know, if you've got a network family and they're living in different parts of the world, they live in different parts of the country, there's the logistics of travel. Mm. Traveling over Christmas can be fraught. You know, the getting a train, getting a plane, if this is going to be a strike or a disruption that's likely to be around Christmas, the roads can be busy. There's getting the family together physically, the grandparents together, so everybody's having this wonderful Christmas time. It's the grandparents there can be a lot of fun, a lot of enjoyment, but I've always never liked, whether with my grandparents or not, it's always been this enforced jollity that I didn't like. And I first personally in the UK, I don't know if you get it in other parts of the world, but I as soon as I start here in Slade, in Tesco or Debenhams, then around about the end of October, that's when it starts to get too much for me.
Chris Rea, his Christmas song comes out every year.
Yeah, we should.
I like Chris Rea. He's like one of my favourite
Chris
Rea
and
musicians.
Slade and all the Wizard and all the other compulsory songs that come out for him.
Don't you think it's the grandparents who are trying to hold it all together? They're trying to hold on to their memories by... It must be quite difficult for them to let the families, first of all, sure, when they start to grow up, they have their own Christmases anyway.
Yeah.
I think my brother's going... You know, he's like that. My brother is a real family guy. He runs some great Christmases. I'm just sorry I'm never there for them. You know, although we use Skype to say hello, but with the family. But the families are growing up now, and I think he's saying, well, maybe they have to have, they can come around on Christmas Eve or something. The big sort of Victorian type dinners, I'm envious of.
I think if I was, I've got two children in Taiwan this year. I've got another two children in the UK, and I've got my stepdaughter here in Thailand. And my stepdaughter here in Thailand is the only child I will spend any time with. I mean, I'll talk to my other kids on Skype or phone, briefly, but I won't join them.
Yes.
They'll do their own thing, and their families are spread out. And now I'm not a grandparent, but if I was a grandparent, I would want to be with my grandchild, I think, over Christmas, and I would make a great effort to do it. But I'm not a grandchild. I know my own children are able to. The older ones are able to make their own decision about what they do. But I know my eldest son Gavin, who's 37. He often feels torn between, where's he going to spend his Christmas? Who's he going to spend his Christmas with? If, you know, is he going to be with me in Thailand? It's been with me in Thailand sometimes. It's been with his mother in the UK. Then the grandparents in this case long since passed away,
yes.
So that's not a factor. But if the grandparents were alive, then that would be additional variable,
yes,
that he'd have to consider. Yeah, makes it even more complicated.
It's much easier for me. I've opted out of Christmas, really, I think. And part of that is living in a Buddhist country for the last 9 years.
Yeah.
You know, although it still seems very strange.
Yeah.
Little shops are open, all the big shops are open.
Yeah,
It's like Christmas doesn't exist, except the shopping malls have put decorations up.
Well, Thailand's interesting, isn't it? Because we've just gone through... We've had a holiday recently in the last few weeks for the King's birthday. Then we've got Constitution Day, which was about 10 days ago.
Yes.
Now we've got Christmas coming up.
Yes.
Then the new year we're going to have, the Chinese New Year will be celebrated.
February time.
That's January.
No, Chinese New Year's more like February, March normally. It's not. I don't think it's January this year.
January, February. Then we've got... Songkran, we've got the Buddhist New Year,
yes,
that's in April. So the whole thing is
Easter. It's one long holiday in
it's
Thailand.
It's one long holiday, yeah. It starts around the end of October and carries right through till middle of April.
Amazing we get any work done.
It's amazing we do, yeah.
But I don't feel those pressures are there. And I suppose also I'm 6,000 miles away from the family, so you know those pressures just don't exist. Although you know, we might go out for a meal Christmas night. We may stay in. You know, what we will do is we'll have our usual big party at New Year.
Yeah,
Stephen, which I haven't mentioned yet, so you're welcome to.
Thank you.
You're invited to our the Shambles Cottage. And anybody that's around, feel free, who's listening to this podcast, feel free to come to the Christmas, to
all
the 10, New 000. Year's do.
Yeah.
I did that once on Twitter and we had a whole load of people turn up.
So yeah, there you have it, Chris. That's Christmas. And Christmas in Thailand, Christmas in Chiang Mai, where the temperature will be about 35. The sun will be non-stop shining. But we are getting, it's a bit cooler. It's not quite so humid. I shall definitely go out for a run on Christmas Day. I'm doing a race on New Year's, on Christmas Eve.
A running race.
A running race, yes. In a place called Lampoon, which is about 30 kilometres south of here. But anything traditional, no. I don't, nothing at all. A couple of Christmas cards get sent out and a bit of Skyping and telephone calls.
So you're not going to buy your wife a present?
No, I
don't. You mean bugger?
No.
Really?
Well, no, because that's a part of me opting out of the whole commercialism. I'm not going to buy the present, no. I don't think so.
Yeah, mean bugger, right.
No, I might take her out for dinner.
Yeah, everybody. Thank God you're not married to him, honestly.
Well, if you're married to me, there's other benefits.
Really? Yeah, okay. All right. No, let's not go into those. It's actually the weather you just touched on is a big part of it. Must be straight. I wonder how you talk to Australians, of course, and the schools have their long holiday over Christmas.
Yeah,
it's not just a Christmas holiday, it's their long annual holiday, and it's on the beach, it's sunny, because it's, December is the middle of summer for Australia. That must be a completely different perspective.
I would, if I was going to spend, if I wasn't here in Chiang Mai, then I'd be quite happy to go down to one of the beach resorts of Thailand and spend it by the beach. And I have done that. I've spent Christmas in Krabi once, and that was really good. I enjoyed that. It was a great time. But
When I was working in Hong Kong, we nearly always came to Thailand to the beaches.
It's one of the benefits of living out here. I'm looking at the UK. I think Christmas in the UK is going to be a particularly difficult one this year for people. And, you know, the weather's particularly bad. It's already started.
It's always bad.
Well, it's always bad, yeah, I know. But it's even worse now. Then there's the economic situation. There's the families under stress and relationships. But there is one benefit, of course, and that's something we can't forget. And we should make sure that there is one very, very important advantage that people have got this year at Christmas around the world, which they've never had before.
Oh.
You don't know what that is, Chris.
I have no idea. I'm on tenterhooks. Tell me.
Something happened this year, which is potential to change people's life and relationships, and it's never been around before. And you've cottoned on that.
I have. I know what he's going to say.
It's
folks.
The Relationship Manifesto podcast series. So,
yes. Oh, we should do an advert now. Don't forget to buy your book, A Relationship Manifesto podcast. Book, right? It's.
So if you are having a bad time at Christmas, you are struggling with the relationships, you have the answer. You can just listen to the series all over again, which is now at...
Or buy the book.
41, or buy the book, yeah. So there you go. So we have made some contribution to the sum total of human happiness.
Or misery. Well, I hope so. It's interesting to know... Yeah, actually, I like that, though. It's nice to find out... I'm a positive guy as well, and life's too short to be negative all the time. It just comes back to you. But I'm going to offer a techie thing for listeners.
Okay, here we go.
A techie thing. Every year since 1955, NORAD, which is the defense agency in North America, NORAD has tracked Santa in real time, and it all goes back to Sears department store making a telephone mistake in one of their adverts, and everybody kept ringing up NORAD to find out where Santa was, and they cottoned onto it, and now every year NORAD tracks Santa in real time.
Right.
So you go to noradsanta.org, and okay, over that sort of 40-hour period, which, because it's not a 24-hour day, it's really, with the time zones, it's a 46-hour day, I think. NORAD actually, and you can track Santa, and people have really got into this. If you've got kids, it's a great thing to do, because people put pictures up and videos up, and you can see. And he comes to Asia first pretty quickly, right?
Yeah,
he comes down from the North Pole and comes into Asia quite early. And you see that. It's a really great thing to do with this, if you've got kids.
Bit of fun, yeah.
You know, where is Santa now? And,
yeah,
it's really good. So that's a bit of a techie thing, nothing to do with relationships. So that's it. So anything else? Or we
no,
can stop
I think
now?
I think that's it. I think I wish everybody a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. A great 2012. We'll have to do a special podcast, I think, for New Year's Eve. If was Mandy, when is New Year's Eve? Will we still be sober?
It's pretty soon.
Because you've got some potent. I know you've got some potent drinks. It might be we're not fit to do a recording for New Year's Eve. But anyway, we'll come to that when we come to it.
Maybe we should do a New Year's Eve Relationship Manifesto podcast at the party. And I'll take my little portable digital audio recorder around, and we can ask people
that
in there.
Yeah, we could do that. We could do.
Too dangerous, maybe.
Maybe I don't know. You have some funny friends. We could be. It could be.
Well, then
I see
there's one here straight
there's
away.
One here, straight away. I'm one of them. Yeah, sure. So yeah, it could be. It could be dynamic in a number of different ways. Yeah, but anyway, back to Christmas. I think it's. What can you say? The benefit of it, it just lasts forever. It's over pretty quick.
Yes.
And it is over a short time. Although there's a big build-up, it's over pretty quick. In fact, it's a bit like sex, isn't it? You've got this massive, you can have this long foreplay that goes on for a while, and then you have this moment of climax. And the climax is Christmas Day, just an hour or two.
And Boxing Day is the anti-climax.
And Boxing Day is the anti-climax, and everybody falls asleep and comes back again.
I think I've just realised where the word anticlimax comes from. I've never thought about that before. Okay, ladies and gents, we better bring it to an end because it's pretty long. This is 50 minutes. We both started off saying, well, we should get a 20-minute podcast out of the Christmas theme. You can visit us on the blog, relationshipmanifesto.posterous.com. as normal, and I think I'll just add my best wishes to Christmas. Hope you enjoy it, and maybe the only thing I'll say is don't forget to have a pause after the stuffing. So see you next week. Listen to you again next week. Have fun.
This recording is part of a Relationship Manifesto podcast series with Chris Smith and Stephen Whitehead.